KJZZ's original production, The Show, is supported by Banner Health, Arizona's largest nonprofit healthcare system. Last year, Banner reinvested more than $1.1 billion in community health and charity care. Banner Health, nonprofit for Arizona. BannerHealth.com/nonprofit4AZ.
Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Super Bowl was in Arizona. I represent Arizona. We threw a Super Bowl fundraiser in Arizona where we raised money for my election in 2023.
Look, I'm really not interested in playing the who gets credit game. The fact is that Arizonans are going to benefit from these tax cuts.
Well, day one, first important issue is balancing that budget in D.C. Our country is $2 trillion in debt every budget cycle. We need to cut that waste, fraud, and abuse and stop the overspending. We have a spending problem.
It's why the president reached out to me. It's why he endorsed my campaign. It's why Speaker Johnson and the rest of Republican leadership reached out to me and said, we need you in this district because we need to make sure it stays a Republican seat.
So he suddenly decides he's going to tie two of these things together and not sign a strongly bipartisan piece of legislation. Clear to me, he doesn't care.
It implicates a citizen ratified code provision with regards to the qualifications for a council member. I believe not only for the city, but even in the best interest for Councilmember Conchas, that the city appeal this ruling.
And with me to talk about the possibility of a deal to keep school vouchers off this fall's ballot, Republicans and Democratic debates in a hotly contested congressional district, and more are Paul Bentz of High Ground. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
And Jason Barraza of Veritas. Jason, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Jason, looks like lawmakers are playing let's make a deal down at the Capitol. This is sort of a redux of what we saw at the very end of the legislative session, where Republicans are looking to maybe put some guardrails in place on vouchers, some new rules on voucher use in exchange for taking a union-based backed initiative off the ballot, maybe some other legislative referrals off the ballot as well. Do you think that there's going to be any different outcome this time than at the end of the session, which did not clear the Senate?
Yeah, well, that's an important point because we've kind of already done this. And I think that both the members and everybody involved in the Capitol community thought we were done with this process. We wrapped up session and everyone was moving on. But lo and behold, we're now back. We're discussing this again. We see tons of moving pieces that we need to bring this together in a very short amount of time. To me, that makes this a very high hurdle for everyone involved to be able to cross.
Paul, do you get the sense that at least part of this is based on each side having nerves about what voters might do?
Absolutely. I think when you think it through and look what happened, especially a lot of these referrals happened in the dead of night. You know, bad things happen after midnight. It's the witching hour, as it were. And I think they were close to a deal and it seemed like an actual agreeable deal. But it does seem getting opposition on both ends of the political spectrum, on the far right and more of the far left. But they didn't get it across the finish line. And instead, the Republicans turned around and referred several items to the ballot, almost seeming like it was a bit of revenge for the idea of coming to a deal. So now they're sort of having to live with that. And I mean, we're seeing that there's implications outside the voucher discussion, that ostensibly this is the voucher discussion. But what it comes down to is there's a lot of unintended consequences. I think one of the biggest ones is the anti-union deal that's supposed to be aimed at teachers specifically does seem to be wide enough to be interpreted that public safety organizations and others have great concerns about it. Mm-hmm. And there's several candidates that need these public safety endorsements as voting is taking place right now.
So, Jason, I think maybe the one difference between what happened at the end of the session and now is the referral that the legislature sent, ostensibly dealing with vouchers for military families, but also containing that poison pill that says it would invalidate any other voucher-related initiative that voters pass. And there is a lawsuit challenging that. But how much does the presence of that change the equation on either side?
To Paul's point, I think it drastically changes the equation for all the initiatives that were passed in the middle of the night at the legislature, because now we know what the playing field looks like and we know what's out there and we know what needs to be debated and what is potentially going to go to the voters. And I think that when you look at the the parties of interest here that are coming to the table, they have a lot of fear about what's going to go out there and what the voters are going to do, because there's a lot of uncertainty. And if they can clear off some of the things that they view as being the most dangerous initiatives out there, I think that that's why they're trying to make this move, because they're trying to take care of this before it even goes to the ballot.
But, Paul, it also potentially puts lawmakers in a tricky spot, both Republicans and Democrats, to Jason's point, as voting is happening, because it seems like the bases of both parties are not super thrilled with this proposal. So if you're a legislator and this comes up for a vote, you're potentially ticking off some number of your voters.
That's right. I mean, it will require a bipartisan level of support. I mean, the interesting thing is this would be a special session, which is a very high bar. But the problem with thinking about a special session, and it does seem like that they're looking at it and trying to figure out who would be in town and everything else. But it opens up the door. So, I mean, this puts a lot of power in the Democratic Party's hands, those legislators down there, to consider other options. Like one of the issues that wasn't addressed was Proposition 123. Mm. Do they try to put that on out there as well? And then we also see that there's other things being offered up to try to move the ball. The challenge with special sessions is kind of like opening the candy store. And it's like, well, what does everybody want? And
right.
So to nail it back down and bring it to more that specified ESAs and other things is going to be a challenge, number one. Number two, yeah, when you look at who's speaking out against it, the Freedom Caucus individuals and some of the groups on the left like the Save Our Schools both seem to be in opposition. But there's a big segment that's trying to narrate why this might be helpful, that it puts guardrails on ESAs, it eliminates tricky lawsuits, it removes things that are open for interpretation and takes a lot of the uncertainty out of the ballot. But like you said, ballots are voting right now. People
yeah.
have ballots in their hand. And so how the reaction to this is going to play a big role. But at the same time, we've got candidates that might be risking their public safety endorsements right now if something isn't done. And I think that's a big – especially in some of these races, I think that's a big deal. The rescission of the public safety endorsements might be even more – impactful than the initial giving of the public safety endorsement.
But Paul, I wonder if given who we know votes in primaries, typically, you know, the bases of a party, that's got to be a consideration for these policymakers too, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they think about there's some of the portions of the base, particularly say on the right, that really don't want any sort of restrictions on ESAs. But at the same time, that same group cares a great, great deal about law enforcement. Mm. And in a lot of these races, law enforcement can be the difference between winning and losing a very narrow primary. And so if they don't address law enforcement's concerns on some of the other bills that are out there, I think they might be in trouble as well.
But to that point, I think that it's also split on the Democratic side drastically when we're talking about base voters, because you have the AEA, the Education Union, and the other unions on one side that are trying to push forward with the deal. And you have Save Our Schools, which is an incredibly powerful and election active education advocacy organization that is on the complete opposite side. So as a Democrat, what a horrible position to be in when the two individuals that you really want to have on your side are now warring in the complete opposite corner.
All right. So before we move on, I'll ask each of you, do you think ultimately, Jason, that there is a deal and a special session?
Too many moving pieces to bring it together in a short amount of time.
Paul, what do you think?
I think there is a chance for a deal, but it will not be a grand bargain. I think it will be a much more narrow, smaller deal than I think originally people are going to think.
All right. So, guys, this week, the candidates in both parties for the first congressional district, one of the more competitive districts, not just in Arizona, but around the country. There are two separate debates, one for the Democrats, one for the Republicans. Paul, what were the key takeaways for you listening to these?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, I think CD1 is the most competitive, if not in the state for sure, but if not in the country. It's been back and forth year after year, one of the most competitive races. When redistricting happened, I think one of the biggest things that we saw is Democrats sacrificed several other congressional districts to make sure that congressional district one in the long term could be in play. And I think they see this with the unpopularity of Trump being a big opportunity. But like you see in the primary here, it's the same old thing that we see all the time. People run to the right and to the left. And actually, what my biggest takeaway was, just like everything else in politics right now, whether it's the reflecting pool or the MMA fight on the White House lawn, it's all about Trump. You saw that on the Republican side, it was who's closest to Trump. Why did Trump pick them? You know, what are they going to do to defend and protect, you know, Trump and his policies? And then on the left side, in the CD1 Democratic debate, it was about who's going to stand up the most to Trump. I think ultimately he's been a driving force, particularly throughout the debates.
Jason, what were your takeaways?
In the Republican primary, I did think it was very interesting where you had Schweikert that was taking a position that the economy is bad and we need to fix the economy. And I was sitting there thinking, do you not understand who's controlling the economy right now? If you got a problem with the debt, I think it's your side of the aisle that's driving up the debt right now. If you got a problem with the economy, it's your side of the aisle that's doing that. So as far as a talking point, I don't know if attacking Trump and the current administration is the way to go for Congressman Schweikert in that primary. On the Dem side, yeah, it was all who can wrap themselves as much with the talking points of the party the most. They all don't like Trump. They all want to impeach him. And I think everybody signed up for that. So it was kind of like who can be the most Democrat or who can be the most Republican in these primaries.
I wonder, Paul, if a lot of the times the candidates in primaries, like there's not a lot of distance between them in terms of actual policy. Like a lot of times they generally agree on the same kinds of policies. So is it maybe in some ways not surprising that the issue for the Republicans of, who does Trump like more, or on the Democratic side, who might be more electable? Maybe that is sort of the focus of a primary debate in a case like this.
Absolutely, especially in a competitive race like that. They have to be careful in these primary elections to not make themselves unelectable or say something that makes them disqualified for the general election. But I mean, CD1 in particular, the whole Northeast Valley, I don't know if you've driven through there lately, but the incredible just sea of campaign signs and the sea of everything else. I mean, it is just absolute, it is just a mess. There's no getting clarity out of any of it, whether it's the Scottsdale City Council races, CD1, any of those mm-hmm. legislative races up there, LD3. It's just everyone is winning the sign race by virtually that everyone's losing the sign race. And I'm not sure the debate's going to change minds, but I think what it comes down to is who's speaking to their grassroots the most, that is energizing those folks that are going to get out and knock on doors, talk to their friends and neighbors. These kinds of races in these crowded fields are going to come down to that word of mouth and who can build that, which is a little different because there's, ads on the air. There's lots of things going on, but at some point it becomes just noise. And so then it's going to come down to that personal appeal. Who do they like the most? And I think that's the challenge over the next few weeks as we go into the election.
And Jason, if you are running in that district as a Democrat, Paul mentioned that, the Democrats kind of played the long game on this one. They've been trying to defeat David Schweikert for cycles now and haven't been able to now that it's an open seat. How important is it for the Democrats to not run too far to the left because they're going to need independents and Republicans to win in a general?
I think it's critical not just for the Democrats but for the Republicans also. I think that's a critical campaign point across the board. The problem is that your primary voters don't necessarily see the world that way. They're not necessarily looking at the electability question. They want to know who's carrying the flag the highest and the brightest. And that becomes the problem because the trick for the candidate is as soon as I get out of that primary, I seriously have to pivot back to the middle and start talking about electability. And that's true on both sides.
Jason, this week Politico reported a pretty long story about U.S. Senator Ruben Gallego and some trips he took, some fundraising events he held where his family came along, his wife and kids came along. There's some payments for travels, for child care, that kind of thing. Obviously, he is not on the ballot. He's not up for anything right now, but he is potentially considering a run for president in a couple of years. Like how concerned, if you are Senator Gallego or in his camp, like how concerned should you be or maybe are you at reporting like this?
I'd be concerned if he hadn't been complying with the law, but that's not the case. He's been reporting. He's been making all the disclosures that need to occur. These expenses have been contemplated by those who put forward our campaign finance laws, and he's complied with that. For me, it would be a good sign. It means anytime anybody's throwing punches at you, it means that somebody thinks that you're a danger. So there's people out there that are considering him to be a threat, maybe for presidential run later on in his career here coming up here. So who knows why they're doing it? But the realization of it all is that he's done everything that he has been allowed to do under the law.
Is it a tough optical look, though? I mean, even though and he has said, like, I'm following the law, we're allowed to use campaign money for childcare, that is perfectly legal. But I'm just wondering, for voters who maybe don't look at campaign finance law, like, is it a bad look?
It, I think it would be a bad look if you had it happening on both sides of the aisle. But we see these fundraising events happening at spring training games, at the Phoenix Open. Obviously, I think the question in here was at the Super Bowl for mm-hmm. him. So, I mean, these events occur on both sides of the aisle. They're something that candidates engage in to be able to raise money. The child care issue is something that is contemplated under the law because as a candidate, yeah, having child care so that you can do the work of the candidate is something that could be an expense of the campaign. It's contemplated and he's doing what he needs to do to be able to be a successful candidate.
What do you think, Paul? Like, how concerning would this be for, or should this be for Gallego?
Well, I think Jason's right that someone's taking aim at him. I mean, like the Politico didn't decide one day I'm going to look through Ruben Gallego's campaign finance reports and see how much money he spent on childcare, though it was $18,000. And he also took a $9,000 trip to St. Bart's. I mean, he's had to quote unquote clear the air a couple of times now, it's been observed. But I mean, the same Senator Sinema was doing the same stuff, traveling all over the country, going to 5Ks and marathons and wine country and everything else. It never amounted to much. I don't think campaign spending is going to be the thing that takes him down. And to Jason's point also is we know about it because he reported it. So while it may not look great optically, I think his talking point about, I'm one of the few senators that has young children and I want them to be near me. But, putting Disneyland on the expense report always is going to raise a few eyebrows as you go through it. But, I mean, ultimately, I think it's, he's not going up for election for another 5 years. I mean, he may or may not run for president. I don't mm-hmm. think he's quite ready for that. But, from the Senate perspective, there's plenty of time between now and then. But it's just what this is sort of – he seems to be in the crosshairs of some individuals because – he seems to be gaining notoriety. He was a bright spot in 2024 when a lot of other Democrats weren't successful. He seems to have some of the magic elixir here of how to accomplish the goal of feeling like an everyman, which is something that a lot of Democrats struggle with. So there seems to be definitely an effort to try to take him down a little bit.
Listening to both of you talk, I'm reminded of the quote from Reggie Jackson, the great baseball player, who said they don't boo nobodies, right? Like they don't – if you're not a great player, they're not going to bother booing you. It sounds like what you're both saying, and Paul, I'll stick with you, is that if Gallego wasn't sort of a notable person in the political world or somebody that maybe somebody is concerned about, nobody would care. Nobody would bother going through all his campaign finance reports and look at this stuff.
Right. There's another version of that says if you're taking on artillery, you're over the target. And I think there's certainly something to be said about that, that there's certainly – he brings a different perspective to the party. He's the guy that, as they said, one of the reasons he was able to win is because he's the kind of guy you want to have a beer with. Mm-hmm. But between the Stalwell stuff and this, they're certainly trying to build a case long term, it would appear, against him.
All right. So, guys, we've referenced the fact that early ballots are out. They were mailed out this week. People are and will be voting over the next several weeks. And yet, Jason, we still don't really know who in Maricopa County is responsible for doing what. The sides are were going to mediation, then that was paused, now it's back on. Like, what do you make of this whole situation given where we are in the calendar?
I don't think it's anybody in Arizona expected we had to be at a point where our election would be underway, but our administrators for that election would be arguing amongst themselves about how to conduct it while we have ballots that are out there and live. So it's an interesting situation. What makes it complicated is the court keeps on starting and stopping this process. We were at mediation, then we're not at mediation, and it sounds like now we're back at mediation. In the end, I think that, folks, let's get together and talk this out and work it out so that we can have a successful election and we can move on with the primary and get on to the general.
Paul, what do you think?
Well, I think it erodes confidence in the election. I think we were starting to come back around post the 2020 election fraud allegations, and I think we were a little bit out of the woods. But this brings it back, and we're starting to see an erosion of confidence in elections once again. And that's an incredible shame that there's certain segments, particularly a portion of the Republican Party that Heap represents, that do not believe that our elections are secure and do believe that there's a significant number of non-citizens voting in the in our elections. Neither of those things are true, A, but B, it's not a majority-held belief, but it does erode the overall confidence. And the challenge is that I think Republicans, certain segments, are starting to see that they're going to have a real big challenge this fall with the lack of popularity of Trump and other things. They're likely to lose seats, and this is a great scapegoat. This is a great place to point. So continue to raise questions about how the elections are conducted. Continue to be intransigent about the way things are done. Is a great place for them to be. I think they should held to the Purcell rule, which is what part of the, what the original thing was. Do not avoid changes right before the election. And I think that's a wise place to be. Maricopa County proceeded with their election plans this week. They announced both the general and the primary and general election plans. I think that's where we should be. Certainly, they got to sort this out and come together on it. But I think voters should have confidence that our elections are conducted well. They're some of the best in the country and have faith in the results.
All right. So, guys, a couple of minutes left before we have to wrap up. And with early voting underway, I'm curious from each of you which there are obviously a lot of competitive primaries going on both here in the Valley and around the state. Jason, I'll start with you. Which primary are you most interested in seeing how it plays out? And I recognize this is like asking a parent to pick their favorite child. So I will apologize in advance.
Yeah, we've got about seven competitive districts right now that everyone is kind of watching who, what's the actual makeup going to be in the general election. You know, I'm looking at the Central Phoenix districts in 2 and 4. That's where I care
for the
about
state legislature.
For the state legislature is where my focus is right now and how those are going to play out. But obviously, like I said, I think there's seven on the table. Paul, I don't know if you know the exact number, but those are the ones that everybody's paying attention to because they're the ones that are going to decide who's going to control the legislature next year.
All right, Paul, which ones are you most interested in?
A couple of down ballot that maybe aren't getting as much attention right now. I think the attorney general race, Glassman versus Peterson. I think that's a big race, especially what we talked about earlier with the special session and public safety yeah. endorsements on the line. I am also interested in the treasurer's race, Norton versus Haley. The Haley got all of the former treasurers to endorse her, but Norton's been I've gotten more in my mailbox from Norton than anybody else by a significant amount.
A lot of signs he's got up too.
Tons. And then the last one I'm really interested in is that CD5 Republican primary. You've got Sheriff former Sheriff Mark Lamb, who has gotten a lot of coverage and allegations against him versus Keenan, who's been spending money on that race. But that'll be a real eye opener for how much do primary Republicans care about something like that. But every day between now and July 21st is election day. Voters are voting every single day.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if you want campaigns to leave you alone, send your ballot in right away. They leave you alone once you actually vote in your election.
Public service announcement from Paul Benz. Jason, any statewide primaries you're particularly interested in?
I'm actually interested to see how the CD5 race turns out with Lamb.
This
Sheriff
is Andy
Lamb.
Biggs or old seat, sort of Southeast Valley.
Correct. And my big concern there is, okay, so now you have the Pinal County attorney that has come out and has kind of cleared Lamb of any wrongdoing. Okay, so he didn't do anything wrong, but how are voters going to treat that? Has enough damage been done that voters are going to turn away? Maybe it wasn't bad activity, but is it activity that we don't approve of? And now do we want to pivot there? It's something that the Democrats should be watching who the candidate comes out that way.
Interesting. All right. Jason Barraza, Paul Benz, thanks you both for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.